gets in the house. It stinks and it's slick to the touch, and I can't keep it off me. I push it away, but he keeps plowing back, and I see tusks. I finally shove it out the door. Now I'm in bed. Here comes the hog again. I can barely stave it off with my hands. It's all over me. I get to my feet and kick it and ram it with my shoulder, and we tumble out into the yard. My mouth is coated with hog slime, and I reach in and scrape it off my tongue. I'm half-dressed, stinking, miserable. Suddenly, we're back in a room, and I can sense I'm being watched. Three or four official-looking people are lined up at a table, like judges on a panel. One of them says, "Here's what you have to do." I wake up knowing two things. One, I have to kill the hog. Two, the hog is a part of me. New Year's Eve, 2014. I weigh 460 pounds. Those are the hardest words I've ever had to write. Nobody knows that number. Not my wife, not my doctor, not my closest friends. It feels like confessing a crime. The average American male weighs 195 pounds. I'm two of those guys with a 10-year-old left over. I'm the biggest human being most people who know me have ever met or ever will. The government definition of obesity is a body mass index of 30 or more. My BMI is 60.7. My shirts are size XXXXXXL, which the big and tall stores shorten to 6X. I'm 6'1", or 73 inches tall. My waist is 60 inches around. I'm nearly a sphere. Those are the numbers. This is how it feels. I'm on the subway in New York City, standing in the aisle, clinging to the pole. I live in Charlotte and don't visit New York much, so I don't have a feel for how subway cars move. I'm praying this one doesn't lurch around a corner or slam to a stop because I'm terrified of falling. Part of it is embarrassment. When a fat guy falls, it's hard to get up. But what really scares me is the chance I might land on somebody. I glance at the people wedged around me. None of them could take my weight. It would be an avalanche. Some of them stare at me, and I figure they're thinking the same thing. There's an old woman sitting 3 feet away. One slip and I'd crush her. I grip the pole harder. My palms start to sweat, and all of a sudden, I flash back to elementary school in Georgia, standing in the aisle on the bus. The driver hollers at me to find a seat. He can't take us home until everybody sits down. I'm the only one standing. Every time I spot an open space, somebody slides to the edge of the seat and covers it up. Nobody wants the fat boy mashed in next to them. I freeze, helpless. The driver glares at me in the rearview mirror. An older kid sitting in front of me, a redhead, freckles. I'll never forget his face. Has a cast on his right arm. He reaches back and starts clubbing me with it, below the waist, out of the driver's line of sight. He catches me in the groin, and it hurts, but not as much as the shame when the other kids laugh and the bus driver gets up and storms toward me, and the train stops and jolts me back into now. I peel my hands from the pole and get off. I climb the stairs to the street and step to the side to catch my breath. I'm wheezing like a 30-year smoker. My legs wobble from the climb. I'm meeting a friend near Central Park at a place called the Brooklyn Diner. Why is there a Brooklyn Diner in Manhattan? Are Manhattan diners not up to lofty Brooklyn standards? I have time to think about such things. I'm 15 minutes early, on purpose, because I have to find a safe place to sit. The night before, I had Googled Brooklyn Diner interior to get an idea of the layout. Now I scan the space like a gangster, looking for